All right, here we go. Good evening, Melroseans the world over. I'm Tom Catalini.
I'm Sam Hammer.
And I'm Tom Shampoo.
And this is Let's Talk Melrose, Melrose, a show where Melroseans talk to Melroseans about Melrose. All right, so that's not bringing back the childhood memories for everyone, but I was riveted by the Melrose community page this week. The mother, M-U-T-H-A, don't want to go to school today video, I found out was filmed at the Melrose Junior High back in the day. Everybody is awesome. Excited.
riveting. Riveting. So the question was, I think one of the questions was, were you there? Who was there?
See, no, listen, I'm cruising. This is like totally hits home for me because I'm cruising the mean streets of Fitchburg back in the day and I'm jamming out to this particular tune. It was in heavy rotation on V66, I think was the channel in the early MTV days. It actually won an MTV Basement Tapes Amateur Video Award. So the video is shot in Melrose. It's fascinating. There's a pool scene that was also at a home in Melrose and somebody posted a link to the photos because the last time it was on sale and you can see all of that. So I thought that was a bit of Melrose history I didn't know about and was very pleased to learn.
Oh my goodness, right. Cheryl Ringen's brother was almost in that video.
Almost in that video.
Well, it's close enough.
For MHS. So, wow.
So in Fitchburg, did you see that video playing with the
on MTV?
Original? I was out when I wasn't out on the streets, you know, jamming to it. I was when I was at home getting a rest, I might flip on the V66 and catch that. And had no idea. But So if you go on the community page, or we could post the link here, it's one of the most 80s things ever. So it is worth watching. And it's a little bit of Melrose history I did not know about. So several people chimed in on the community page who were
about
here.
That video.
Yeah, the guy who grew up in the house where the pool scene takes place chimes in. It's a great bit of history I didn't know. So I guess Gary Cherone, the lead singer of Extreme, the band that sings that video, is from Malden. And I guess he even did a stint as a lead singer with Van Halen for a little bit. Dr. Morelli's house because of his uncle is one of the band members. All right, there we go.
Cheryl. That's amazing.
The inside scoop.
So that's the scoop. And I'll tell you, you got to tune into this show every week, Tuesday nights at 8:30, but you got to check out that community page. There's gems all the time.
Daily, yeah. Hourly.
The joy of this is that it's technology that we use today to bring us back in time and review history. That's what it's all about.
The resolution, it's almost like you almost can't make out what's happening in this video because the resolution is so coarse. But anyway, there it is.
All right. Well, good for them.
All right. Let's move on to the bigger news in town. Oh, we forgot to tease everybody. Dr. Julie Kuchenberger is on the show as a special guest tonight. So it further ties into the school theme, the stars are aligning. But Sam is also going to tell us about the school and city budget that just passed.
That's right. So congrats to Melrose. We passed our biggest $91 million budget. I'm going to put up the link if you're curious to see where your tax dollars are going. I'll put the link up. It's actually pretty cool to take a look to see. There we go. I can't talk and type at the same time. Over the years where things kind of have shifted around and what our priorities are, one being housing policy. So that is also up for public comment. I'm going to put a link to the MAPC open house survey. So please do that as well if you want to jump in on the conversation about housing. And then I'll just keep going. Incentive zoning.
While you're doing that, I'm posting a link to the mother video.
Okay.
Folks can go directly to the pre-album release filmed in Melrose version.
Sam is doing such a great job of like explaining what's really going on, and Tom loves that video, man.
No matter. But also what is real and fabulous is incentive zoning has passed, passed last week. So that's going to be really exciting to see how that impacts some of our building areas and the opportunity for new or increased development, as we discussed over the weekend. There probably is a line item for beer garden. I think I'll just confirm that. We put up our "This is not news" banner now. Okay, and then also actual news is welcome to Margot Fleischmann. She is our new director of strategic initiatives and communication.
So I got to just jump in and say I was thrilled to hear about this. So you read the description and the press release, and it seems like she has some real credentials. But I just like that kind of position happening in Melrose, because it there feels like some things need to be pulled together and a little bit more strategically aligned and communicated. So I, you know,
as what would you like her to strategically align for you?
Well, I mean, we were just talking about it before the show, like even just there's there's basic like website stuff, like, you know, we've been doing remote meetings for a year and a half and I still have to go to like two different places to get the link. So I think there's like little things like that that you trip over to just kind of knowing what's going on in town. Maybe I would hope, so there's so many different directions you could go with this, but like the around the to the budget that just passed, right? Your options are to like watch all the meetings, you know, or could somebody like summarize this and bring you along for the journey without having to spend it? Like, so that there's a lot of things I'd be interested in. So I think probably the challenge of that position is really, how do you focus? You know, which three or four things do you focus on to kind of bring that together?
And how do you engage the community so that people are aware of that, but also engage in that process to some extent too? So that's important, I think, for everybody.
Yeah. And so she's been a select board member in Bedford for about 10 years. So I'm curious, I'm interested in seeing what she brings here that she's learned from there. I would love to see her focus on economic development and business development opportunities. But also just, she also has a background in restorative justice. So I think this is a great time to, you know, continue the work in diversity, equity, inclusion, and restorative justice measures. And I just am excited that she's here.
Right.
So, and, long list. I have a long list for her.
But part of it, you know, I think part of it too, I mean, timing wise, it's really terrific, I think, because the opportunities are that we're coming out of a pandemic. And so we're reassessing how we function in, as a city in some ways. As Tom mentioned, you know, we're a year plus on virtual meetings. But I think other things are happening too. We're reopening the state now in a way that hasn't been opened in over a year. So I think that with her coming on board now, it's a great time to see how we can change our perspective and our viewpoints toward what success looks like. So good for her. I'm happy.
Yeah. And I think that's the key thing. How do you focus? We're about to talk to the superintendent. It's like, that's a big job with a lot of responsibilities, and you could slice it a number of different ways, but like, how do you decide on what to focus? You can really only put so much energy into so many things. You have limited resources. So the position sounds great. I'm glad it's here. You know, we'll see how it goes. I would love to have Margot on this show. That's one of the best ways you can do community outreach in Melrose.
All right, sure.
You know, and I think just to, if I could just add one other thing about how we talked a lot about the things that have changed, or the way that we, our culture, our society, our education, how things have changed over the past year. We have outdoor seating. We have parklets. We have the ability to have online meetings. I'd love to see, I'm going to high five my bike ped friends on, let's continue to do some of these things where we focus on humans first, and make our city a lot more livable as we have. So I'm curious to see where she takes that.
That's an interesting discussion on the community page too, because people want to expand the bike lanes, and people, you know, some people are saying like, there's not that many bikers. And it's like, well, it's chicken in the egg, right? Maybe there's not that many bikers because it's not that
safe. It's kind of dangerous, right?
Main Street. Yeah. So,
So
there's a lot to sort out. Anyway, we should get to our special guest. So, Sam, are you going to just remind us about Pride?
I am. Yeah. So, Thursday night, I'm going to put the link in, is the Human Rights Commission Pride kickoff. It's an amazing event. I hear one of our former guests, Jenny Wingrovius, will be singing. So, definitely head down. And then on Saturday, there was going to be some community art and chalk projects. So I'll put those links in here. But stay proud, Melrose.
Yes. Good.
I heard a lot of people are going to try and recreate the LTMM logo in the Pride colors. I think that's going to be a common.
Yeah, wait to see that.
Common sketch. Yes.
On it. Right.
And,
no, I'm kidding.
And with that, let's bring up Dr. Kuchenberger.
All right. Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you here.
Yeah, I'm super honored to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
It's so nice that you've decorated your home to look exactly like your office at school.
Kind of the cement block vibe. It just was, yeah. I couldn't read it.
I like the color. The cement blocks I could maybe do without, but I do like that color.
It's calming. It's calming color.
Thank you. I do have some nice windows on this side. You can't see.
Oh, nice.
Get to watch all the kids. Wow. Oh,
wow. So we were talking this weekend about having you coming on tonight, which again we're so thrilled to host you. And the conversation was like how do we even start? What's the like how many questions can we ask and how much time do we have? But really, one of the things that I feel like we wanted to start with was to remind people that last year was such an unusual year for so many people in so many different ways. And part of the conversation was, you know, people have all these different opinions. I'm sure you heard many opinions over the last 12 months. But really, you know, part of the starting point for me was to say, let's remember how difficult the year it was for everybody, not just in Melrose or in Massachusetts, but across the country and across the world. We went through a year where countries closed themselves down to other people, right? And changes were happening in real time. We had many federal agencies trying to talk to each other to understand what it meant and what was happening. And so when all of that filtered down to the municipal level for a place like Melrose, there's so many moving parts. It's impossible to gauge how we can navigate all of them. And then you come in on July 1st as a brand new person and you have to navigate that and also learn the job, but also learn the people and also learn the culture and everything else. So kudos to you for navigating all that the way that you did. But again, it's just really important to remember that there were so many different things happening at one time. And we had a presidential election. We had crazy stuff being posted different places. We had so much happening. So again, thank you for all that you've done. And now we want to hear about what it was like and how you were managed, I guess.
Well, the good news is that I actually was able to start transitioning before July 1st. So working with, the former superintendent, Cindy Taymor, and the leadership team, again, like one of the perks, right, the virtual meetings, I was able to literally be in two places at once for a couple of months.
Right.
So that really helped us hit the ground running, which is exactly what we did. I mean, we started planning in June and May, really, but then really intensifying those plans in June and July and just the thing that I think is so remarkable and almost hard to remember how many times we had to reinvent school this year, because we had so many first days of school for different groups of students based on when they were ready to come back into the district and learning in person. So that's just incredible to think about. I look at our leadership team and I'm just amazed at their stamina and their perseverance and just the way that they've all worked together. It's really been incredible and remarkable. And
can,
so
we talk, can we talk about the leadership team for a second there? So like when you say that, I know that there's this, I conceptually know there's a central administration, there's different school principals and all that. But when you say leadership team, like who does that involve?
So when I say leadership team, I'm talking about our big team. So there's about 33 folks right now. And then we're hiring a couple new directors that will join that team. So that's all of, it's myself, the assistant superintendent. So we have two assistant superintendents. It's all of our principals. So we have 8 principals. It's all of our assistant principals. We have 5 assistant principals. All of our department directors, our special ed coordinators. And then depending on, what work we're doing, we bring in the business manager or the assistant city solicitor or our food service director. But that core of like 30, 33 of us come together once a month. But in the summer, it was for like days, hours, nights, lots of time together, really just thinking about every little nuance of like school that we do kind of in our sleep on a given year, but had to rethink every single aspect of what we do.
How do you navigate something like that as a superintendent? Yeah. Because that conversation could go in any number of directions. We can barely hold this show together with talking about a couple of things that came up on the community page. So in a serious situation, when you've got people who could weigh in with material issues from 30 different perspectives, or at least a dozen different perspectives, how do you navigate something like that and make it effective?
Yeah.
Well, I think for us, a couple of strengths here in Melrose, which there are many, but one is the student-centered focus. So we start with health and safety, and that had to be first and foremost. So what were the health and safety protocols that we needed to put in place? Working with our partners on the city side, I mean, what DPW has accomplished this year is right alongside what we've all accomplished, just helping us make sure that our schools can be as clean as possible, as healthy as possible, as safe as possible. So we just sort of prioritize. So starting with all of that, and the good news again here is that we have a really strong foundation, a teaching and learning foundation. We have a really strong strategy. So once we were able to get some of those logistics and, that kind of operation stuff worked out, then we had to make sure we kept our eye on the prize in terms of our equity work and our universal designs for learning, really making sure that we're thinking about how can we create the most safe and inclusive schools, whether students are learning here in person with us or learning from home. So it's just that constant bringing us back to that conversation and having that diverse thinking on a large team like that really helps make sure that we're thinking of everything. And then we work in smaller teams, sub teams, and bring those ideas together.
Okay. And I know Sam's got another question, a little bit more forward looking, but you mentioned DPW and the cleaning. So I know that they're responsible for the grounds, and I know that there's a city school sort of partnership in ways like that, but they actually did the internal cleaning of the buildings?
So all of our custodians are city employees. They work for DPW.
Okay.
So
they are our
partners. That was actually the first in-person meeting I had outside of meeting the leadership team was with Jay McNeil, who's our facilities guy, and Elena, who's our DPW director, just really starting to think about air quality, cleaning procedures, what materials do we have, what PPE, remembering all those conversations about PPE right. Do we need? Right. And then of course, right alongside with the health director too, and making sure that, the products that we're using are safe and can be, what can kids use? What can adults use? I mean, it's kind of like, haven't thought about those things in a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
But, so Tom and I both have kids who just graduated from the high school. So off to go to college. Yeah. And my older daughter is also in college already. So my kids are now out of Melrose Public Schools after 13 years each. But I was inspired by seeing my son's ability to sort of shift and adjust. He was hybrid. He did half at school, half home. Mm-hmm. And I was inspired as a parent to see him adjust the way that he had to continue on with his education. What was your perspective of seeing the kids adjust? How do you feel they did? How do you feel the reaction was from the children themselves going through this enormous change?
Well, generally, I'll say the kids were incredible. I mean, they have just rolled with this all along. We can change something overnight, and they're like, okay, what do we have to do? A little harder for us as the adults to be as adaptive as they were. But, what we really noticed and what we knew even before we started was that we were going to have ways to monitor individual student progress as we go, because we knew that some students may have the potential to thrive in a remote or a hybrid environment. And for others, that was going to be really hard or impossible. And so that's why we had so many starts to the school year, because, as you know, we started remote for most in the beginning. But we knew, our highest need students and our youngest learners needed to be with us as much as possible.
Yeah.
And then just as soon as November, we started saying, okay, we need to start delivering more specialized individual services in person, because remote wasn't working for all kids. Yeah. So that was an adaptation that we made. And then adjust again in February, adjust again in January, then again in February, then in March, then in April. And so now we have, we still have a lot of students who are learning from home, and for those students, this has been a good option for them. In fact, it's been, they've been thriving in this option. So as much as we, there's been a lot of focus on getting kids in person, we don't want to forget about our MDLA learners, because they really have been amazing and really flexible too.
Which is the perfect transition to kind of our next topic of conversation, which is, you know, now that we're kind of emerging on the other side, you know, if a pandemic can't disrupt and rebuild or evolve our public education system, then literally nothing can. Mm-hmm. And so obviously we've had to be resilient, and we've had to test and try new things and different models for different kids. And thank you for doing all of that. But you mentioned we had to reinvent school several times. What do you think we could continue on, or what sorts of things do you think we could maintain as we kind of move back into, when we go back into the fall, for those students who are thriving at home and doing distance learning? What are your visions for that, or what are your thoughts on that?
So we already know, the commissioner's already made it quite clear that in the fall, the expectation is going to be that everybody's back learning 5 days full in person. There are a handful of districts who are going to be piloting some remote schools. We've talked about it here in the Middlesex League, like, is there an opportunity for a shared partnership? And I know what's driving the commissioner's decision about full in person. It's, you know, weighing at scale the benefits of in-person learning versus remote learning. And we just know for the majority of students, in-person learning is essential. And, you know, just to kind of circle back a little bit to the kids and what you notice in the kids, it's what I think one of the many things I've learned this year is that school is way more than academics. I've always known that. Our kids really showed us that it's about belonging and connections and just seeing each other, even if you can't see each other's faces. And, you know, just to hear some of the moments of joy and excitement at just basic routines. And they're like, whatever we need to do, as long as we get to be here, for the most part. So some of the things that I hope that we can continue with, is really, and we have some adjusting to do, because we went way from, you know, we weren't even one-to-one district when this started. So just the fact that we were like overnight, it usually, you know, takes a couple of years for districts to go one-to-one, and we were like, boo, gotta do it.
We're speaking for on technology specifically, right?
What's one-to-one?
So now we have one device that the district owns for every single student in the city of Melrose. Before, you had to buy your own, and some kids had, you know, the MacBooks, like the Cadillac of technology, and others didn't. So that's awesome from an equity standpoint too. But then our teachers, the growth, I mean, to see how they transform their practice and the way that they have tried and tested so many different technological tools, it's incredible. And the different ways that they're now assessing their kids and engaging learners. I think for me, I haven't been in the classroom in 13 or 14 years, but now I feel completely irrelevant. Like, I could never step foot in the classroom again and do what I've seen our teachers doing this year. It's remarkable. So one of the things we're going to do, Tom, is look at what are those technology tools that we want to hold on to, because we went sort of from, you know, wanting to integrate more technology to, now we've spent a lot of time on screens, and we don't want that to become the new normal. We don't want every day to be so much screen time. Go ahead.
Yes. And so what I was going to ask is, the frustrating thing for me, and although my kids are beyond school, so a couple of things you said resonated with me, the school being more than the academics, right? So I get kids in college, and that's a, you know, academics is like a third of it, you know, and like two thirds is the life experience growing as an adult and all of that. But back to Sam's question and the commissioner's stance, I get frustrated that it's like this all or nothing binary thinking. And the same thing is happening in the world of work, right? So it's happening at offices are struggling with this. Like, it's not just schools, it's not just Melrose, but it'd be interesting to find a way to navigate this where we could take like the best of each thing and carve out some things. And maybe it doesn't work for everybody, but maybe it works for some people. Or so my daughter had been in Edgenuity prior to the pandemic. And that was an innovation I only became aware of through our guidance counselor that ended up working for her on a limited basis in a certain situation. And it was like, that was really a cool thing to know existed and have happened. So again, post-pandemic, it would be nice, and you don't necessarily have to respond to this on the specifics, yeah, but just I just wanted to voice that it would be nice to have some nuance to this going forward. Right. You go up to these top levels like Tom's talking about, and it gets, you know, it gets boiled down to, you know, binary issues, which is sort of frustrating.
Yeah, I hear you.
That was beautiful. I love that.
No kidding. Wow.
Catalini on fire. That was really good. So
oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. There you go. Wow.
Sorry, you missed yourself. Congratulatoriness. So speaking of next year and priorities and visions, do you have anything that you could share with us? Like, now that, again, we're going to kind of get a little dust is going to settle and we're going to move forward together again. Where are you going to pivot, or where are your priorities going to be next year?
So we're really going to stick with what we've been doing here at Melrose. So we've had our strategy overview has four big overarching goals. So I can't remember who said it before, like what are the three or four things that we're focusing on? And we're going to continue to focus on that. So it's, you know, the universal design for learning, making sure that all students have access and opportunity, no matter what their needs are, no matter where they are. And this is going to be a critical part of our COVID recovery plan, right? Because we need to be able to adapt and adjust to meet students where they are. One of the things that frustrates me in this conversation about the pandemic is that all this talk about what kids are learning loss, kids don't, you know, kids are going to be so far behind, when really I think the conversation needs to be on, you just survived a global pandemic.
Yes.
And you are happy and you are healthy. And if you're not, let's talk about that first, right? We need our kids to be happy and healthy first. And then we as the adults have to adjust the environment to meet them where they are. And then talk about how are we going to accelerate that learning. And we're so fortunate in Melrose because we have the tools. We have the foundation. We're constantly evolving our curriculum, but that'll be a big part of our work. And we have several teams working this summer to work on that, teacher teams. So they aren't taking the summer off. That's not a real thing for teachers. And then being able to really design our learning environment so that we can respond to the variability of interests and employ culturally responsive, personalized, and inclusive practices across the board. We don't want it to be the luck of the draw of what classroom or course you're taking, whether or not you have those experiences. And so part of that is making sure that our environments are safe and supported. So we have to look around our environment and say, who's represented here? Who's represented in our curriculum? You know, who has a voice in our conversation? So that's part of our work, that equity work that wraps all of this together, and our focus on personalized learning. So we're going to continue that work. The leadership team and a bunch of teachers have professional development all next week. So short celebration on Friday and through the weekend. And then we're getting right to, you know, that job of being a continuous lifelong learner and starting to hone our skills so that we can start planning for next year. So Friday is a planning day for the leadership team, the 25th. And then we have like three whole days in July where we're going to be really thinking about what's our COVID recovery plan going to look like. And we'll start sharing that out with the community as soon as we're ready.
Wow. So if you're going to pick three or four things, those are pretty big things, it sounds like. And then just to remind myself and everybody, right, we're talking about K to 12. So that's little 5-year-old, you know,
pre-K. Going in it. Don't forget about the baby.
Pre-K. Yeah. Well, but you know, back in my day, we didn't have that. that's relatively new as far as I know. So pre-K, you know, kids learning how to stand in line and get milk at the counter, whatever, all the way up to the 18-year-old graduates who are young adults ready to go off and shaving and going off to college to learn to really kind of become independent. So that's just a wide range of things to accomplish those goals. So good luck.
there is no question here.
It's an observation.
I'm very ranting tonight. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I have a quick question. I'm just curious about technology and the technology's role. Again, you came in the middle of a pandemic. So if you were coming in the middle of a regular year, you'd be focused on many different other kinds of things, I'm sure. But I'm just wondering how you feel technology is, what's the state of technology in the schools throughout across that K or pre-K through 12. are there major gains that have to be made, or is it in good shape, generally speaking?
We're in really great shape. Again, we share the IT department with the city. It's another shared service that we have. So Neil Ellis is our IT director. And then we have multiple folks who support in the building. But we're really super excited about a new position that we are able to move forward with this budget that just passed last night. It's a director of personalized learning and informational technology.
Oh, that's great.
So we're in the process of finalizing who that person is, and we'll announce that to the community soon. But this is really going to help us go from like using technology for consumption and delivery of content to using technology to create and innovate. And that's that true technology integration and that shift that we want to make. But in terms of materials, tangible devices, we're really well set. We now are one-to-one, like I said, with devices for kids. All of our teachers got new Chromebooks this year, or I'm sorry, new laptops this year. The IT department's been working on replacing the kind of smart board projectors that were failing in the school, so because we're using that tool in so many ways. And then some of the PTOs and the IT department and the school department, we were able to buy document cameras for teachers. So you might have seen in the beginning a lot of this going on, trying to use the camera there. But a document camera is an awesome tool. Teachers can be writing under it. Kids can be writing under it, and then it's projected on the wall. You can put
That's the old school projector. That's right.
Transparent. A fancy overhead projector.
Yeah.
Wow. Flashbacks.
But some of the things that we want to move forward more support for are our robotics teams and our robotics club, and really getting that up and running. That kind of the pandemic kind of put the I don't know what the right word is on that. Been talking with the teacher who leads that work and talking about how to get some more garage robotics up and running, which I think is how we started with our elementary kids, and thinking about how that grows up through the high school.
Yeah, we just signed up for that yesterday, awesome. I think.
You
did. The Lego iRater club, right, or whatever.
Yeah, my son did that for a bit, and it's great because it's about problem solving. Right. And it's in independent work, and the kids sort of leading the way. It's like the it's like the destination imagination stuff that Jen LeClaire is involved in.
Just gonna say that.
They take a leadership role, and they have to solve a problem and work through all of that.
So that's great,
thinking process, right? That's what we did as a leadership team to kind of build our return to instruction plan.
And it reminds me of the STEM fair and the art show, a couple of things that, again, not, well, mm-hmm. I guess I don't know what's academic, what's not, but they were cool things to go and see project work that the kids were doing, which is always impressive.
That was open to the community.
So we're also super curious to see where your new diversity officer goes first and what their priorities are, but we will wait until they arrive, whoever they may be.
If we must.
But yeah, we talk a lot about issues around DEI in the show, and obviously the community has been very heightened on all of those issues. But that's one of the things I love most about Melrose, is how open this community is. Now that you're kind of less, you're not as new, but what do you really love about Melrose?
Great question.
The people. I think I have to say the people. From day one, this is how I met most people. And it's just the people have been so warm and welcoming, and, have high expectations of us for sure. But almost every email, maybe one or two didn't start this way, but the rest all did, was thank you so much. Just an expression of gratitude for the work that I'm doing, but that our teachers are doing, and everyone in the school system. And you don't have that everywhere. That has not been my experience in every district I've been in. So that just, to me, it gives us the motivation to want to continue to work hard. And we know that you expect a lot of us. And I have to tell you, you're getting a lot out of these people. I've never worked in a district where people work so hard. And I'm not just saying that. I truly, truly mean that. It's incredible. I've always felt like I was sort of leading the way in other districts that I've been in. And here in Melrose, I feel like I'm trying to catch up to our teachers and to our leaders, because they are just incredible.
I would give a shout out to the guidance department, and in particular, Joe Perillo, who was a guidance counselor for all three of my kids and was just fantastic. Yeah. Exactly what you're talking about. He immediately jumps to mind.
And I think, too, if you were at graduation, which you were, you one of the things I heard every student speaker talking about, but also emulating, was just kindness and community and caring. Like, it really does feel like one big family.
Yeah. And that's a message that they hear from kindergarten on. It really is. I mean, I remember my kids went to Lincoln, and that was a top tier message that they heard every day from everybody that they saw.
Yeah. Today. And Mr. Merrill totally echoes that at the high school.
Yes, level. He sure does.
Yeah, absolutely. So what? Oh, sorry.
No,
go ahead. I was going to steal your thunder there.
Go get it.
Sam. Yes. So the follow-up question is, what can the community do to help you?
Yeah.
And the school system? What else, what would you like to see as far as support or input or anything from the community?
So I think that this is something that I think a lot about, continuing to be a partner with us. We are going to keep pushing ourselves to our edge, particularly around our equity work and our work around social justice. Just this week alone, I've had a couple community members who've reached out, and they're inquiring, like, are you teaching critical race theory at school? They're hearing these messages in the media, and it's a confusing message, I think, for families, and it's a really complex issue, but we're going to keep, sorry, they're vacuuming.
Oh, I thought that was Sam's. I thought that was Sam's dial-up modem for some reason. I'm still back in the 80s with Extreme.
So I think it's just keep wrapping your arms around us, keep having our teachers' backs. We want to take risks. We want to push ourselves outside of our comfort zone. We're not going to get it right every single time. And so we just need to know that you have our backs and that you're going to support us in this work.
Absolutely. Okay. And I think, one of the comments you made before the show started was about communication. I think part of us supporting you is by getting all the messages and all the work that you're doing. And there was a lot of communication in the beginning. And I think you joked about too much. I don't think it's ever too much if people really want to. But where are you? You mentioned if we don't tell our story, then somebody else is going to do it for us. Mm-hmm. So do you have any thoughts on I don't really have a question, I guess, but I think I just wanted to mention that you said it in the beginning. And if there were any way that we could, by hearing from you through whatever communication means you have, I don't know if you need a TV show, a podcast, we know people, but that we can help support in you relaying your narrative and retelling your story on your behalf. That would be super helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be super helpful. One of the things that's really challenging about communication with public schools is that we get so busy doing the work and we're like immersed in it that we forget that we have to tell people about it. And so in the beginning of the year, it was a lot more communication. One of the things I really want to do is evaluate like what kind of communication will resonate with folks, because what happens is you have your principal's communication that comes out weekly. And then you have, my communication that was coming out really frequently, and then I kind of tapered it off to like once a month. But then we have our curriculum, newsletters that come out that are really rich, and there's so many resources in there. So wanting to kind of help people focus, and
I was just going to say, we got one suggestion for you: infotainment.
Who said that? Was it a comment or is this your recommendation?
That was it. So what we have found to be super successful are sound effects, jokes, and generally speaking, infotainment, right? Don't you want to watch a sketch comedy show about what's happening at the school? No, that's more work.
I just need a team like you.
There we go. Yeah.
You guys are available.
We are.
I think Tom's offering to be hired as a sound effects person for meetings and for other special events.
I do hope you come back on the show, because so you're welcome to use our vehicle, because it is really meant to be a bridge between, you can follow what's happening. The Patch does a great job. The Melrose Weekly News does a great job. And you get, the key points. You can tune in and watch the meetings, which I sometimes do, but it's it's kind of dry unless, you know, something sort of dramatic is happening. Like super dramatic. That's the disappointing thing is people only pay attention when it's like a super dramatic, controversial thing. And everybody shows up to this one meeting for some public comment thing, and then it all goes away. So we are trying to sort of fill a gap in a certain sense, as a more casual but informative outlet. And anyway, so yeah, I think we would offer that. We love having you on tonight and in the future. We have had other folks from town on for that same reason. You know, the mayor, so it's again, that would be easy for you to do. The mayor, I know, does his own podcast, which I've listened into on the topics that I'm interested in. Yeah. And it's just nice to hear like a 15-minute casual conversation about something you're interested in the city. It's impossible to keep up with everything. You just ticked off a list of like an overwhelming amount of information that would come at somebody who's interested, and they're probably involved in other things and get all kinds of things coming out. So I don't really know what the solution is, but we're trying to be part of it. And we'd love to have you on in the future again, if you think this is useful.
I'm sure there's probably a half a dozen things that people would say, I wish you did that. And you're like, well, we are.
Right.
We're doing that. So yes, you're right. Communication is going to be the key. And again, we're happy to help in any way we can, but I think there's lots of opportunities for the community to stay engaged and to get to know you better. And, you know, once this year is behind us, and then move forward.
Yeah, I will just add to that. I love when people call up and ask questions or send emails and ask questions. And then, you know, I like to just pick up the phone, and that seems most authentic to me than trying to prepare something and guess what you want to know. I'd rather, you know, some sort of casual way, maybe like a podcast or something where it could just be people could call. And that's why we did those Ask Me Anythings this year. It just was like, let's talk about what's on your mind at this moment, as opposed to, because there's so much to communicate about, really.
Right.
Yeah, that was a good format. Same thing. That was a great format.
So we're coming up over time, which is great, because that's what we kind of planned for. But if you were to give us the city of Melrose, your new city, kind of a short graduation speech on how we did this year.
As a city,
or, you know, as you in it, what would you say? What would you say as we graduate out of this pandemic and back into a new world?
Thank you. And thank you for staying focused on the important work and not just getting bogged down in all things pandemic. I mean, the amount of the diversity and equity work that's happening with the Human Rights Commission and the Racial Justice Coalition and the Friends of Melrose MECO, making sure we still had events to connect with our Boston families, that all could have easily gotten lost in the midst of the pandemic, and it didn't. And to me, that really says, this is at your core. These are your values, and this truly is one community open to all. And so that makes me proud to be connected to the city of Melrose. Wow. So thank you for all that.
Yeah, you're good. Thank you. That was very good. Fantastic.
I'm speechless because I'm it's nice to hear that people see that, and nice to know that this is the relationship that's being built between the two sides.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This is really fun. Yeah.
All right, so hang on, we got to dance it off here, and. Oh, wait a second. I had the wrong music.
Yeah, I guess.
I had the wrong song queued up. That's for after the show. Anyway, thank you for joining us and having that great conversation with us here, and for everybody out there. And to everybody out there in Melrose land around the world, we'll see you around town.
Thank you.
There you go.
This one.